Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, we hear about a dramatic police raid in France in the aftermath of last week's deadly terrorist attack. An analyst considers stopping Syrian refugees from entering U.S. states. Anonymous steps up to the plate in the fight against terrorism.
First, let's take a look at who or what Anonymous is. I very often liken it to fog. You know it's definitely there, but it's very hard to actually grab onto anything.
And Hollywood rallies behind the victims of the Paris attacks. It's right here on The Voice of America. A 7-hour police raid in the Paris suburbs of Saint-Denis has ended with 2 people dead, 7 arrested. Correspondent Daniel Scharf was in the area of the raid and joins us on the line. Welcome, Daniel.
Good to be here.
Thank you. We were watching portions of this raid on television. It was very dramatic. Tell us what you saw and heard being right there in Paris.
Well, there was a huge police and military presence in Saint-Denis. It was a 7-hour standoff that was taking place with suspected militants that were holed up inside an apartment building in Saint-Denis. They had put up tape, and there were police vehicles everywhere blocking off journalists and pedestrians who were in the area. Very large media presence, as you can imagine, just coming a few days after these horrible terrorist attacks that took place in Paris. And, of course, the suspicion was that the mastermind was inside this apartment.
How did the police know to enter this particular area?
Well, from what information has been coming out, it sounds like they were tipped off by local security. We don't know exactly if that means police or anti-terrorism officials, but this is what we're getting so far, that there was a tip-off that something obviously suspicious was going on. And it turns out, of course, that obviously something very much linked to the attacks that took place on Friday was going on in this apartment building, as one of the suspects, a woman, blew herself up with a vest of explosives in a suicide move to avoid being taken into custody.
Is this raid being seen as a successful battle in the continuing war against terrorism?
Well, if we look at the casualties among police, there were a few injuries. One police dog was killed, but there were no other people killed on the side of the authorities. There were 2 suspects who died and several who were arrested and taken into custody. So, of course, you know, in any situation like this, I'm sure that the police and security forces would rather have arrested all of the suspects and not have anyone have died, as 2 of the suspects did, so that they can get to the bottom of, you know, how this entire plot was laid out, and to try and find out exactly where the other wanted suspects in the attacks, where they're hiding out, and who else may be involved in helping them in terms of logistics, weapons, and explosives, and so forth.
What is the feeling there in Paris today?
Well, in Paris, we're still seeing, you know, 4 days after these attacks, there is still very much a sense of mourning. The city, to some degree, is still a little tense, of course, and with these new raids that were taking place very early this morning, this 7-hour standoff, certainly it has heightened people's awareness that this may not yet be over for Paris, that there could be further incidents. The prime minister, very early on, had sent out a warning saying that this was a possibility, that there could be, unfortunately, more attacks that could take place in the coming days, weeks, and months. And that has unfortunately come to fruition.
Well, thank you very much, Daniel, for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
The situation in Paris is still a huge topic on social media. My colleague Michael Lippin joins us with the latest stats from Twitter. Michael.
Hi, Susan. Well, I've been checking the data on Paris-related tweets, and the Topsy Analytics website shows that the 2 most popular hashtags are Paris and Paris attacks. Hashtag Paris attacks has been mentioned at least 196,000 times in the last 24 hours, while hashtag Paris has been tweeted 147,000 times. Now, those are big numbers for hashtags related to a world news event. But they were even bigger on the day of the attacks last Friday. That's when those hashtags were mentioned around 2 million times each. And that's a level of usage that is really quite rare on Twitter.
Yeah, it's amazing. What are some of the other Paris hashtags that are getting attention today?
Well, you know, we're seeing new hashtags pop up and gain traction as new developments emerge in the story. So far today, we've seen hashtag Paris Siege being used more than 3,000 times. Now, that's a reference to the siege in the Paris suburb of Saint-Denis that Daniel Scharf was just telling us about. Well, even more popular than that one, though, are two other tweets also connected to the siege, hashtag Diesel and hashtag RIP Diesel, with the letters RIP meaning rest in peace. Now, if you're wondering who people are talking about with those hashtags, Diesel is the name of the 7-year-old French police dog that was killed when security forces raided the Saint-Denis apartment where the suspected terrorists were hiding. Now, Diesel was a Belgian shepherd that French police say was part of a team of assault and explosives search dogs that are indispensable in the missions of security forces. The dog's death has drawn thousands of messages of sympathy on Twitter from users mentioning the hashtags Diesel and RIP Diesel. Here's one that I found. One woman wrote, "A dog sacrificing his life for a battle caused by men. He truly can be called our best friend. Hashtag RIP Diesel and hashtag Je suis chien," which is French for I'm a dog.
Susan? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Michael. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL, is developing what they call a chemical laptop to help search for extraterrestrial life. The battery-powered device is actually a miniature laboratory that is being equipped to gather and analyze samples in order to detect any material that might be associated with life, such as amino and fatty acids. Once developed, NASA says they'd like to send it out on a spacecraft to a destination such as Mars or Europa, one of the moons of Jupiter. NASA describes the device as a chemical analyzer that's about the size of a laptop computer. And, like a computer, their chemical laptop can be programmed and reprogrammed to perform a variety of functions. The researchers conducted a successful field test of the chemical laptop last year at JPL's Mars Yard, a simulated Martian landscape. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
In light of the Paris attacks, there is a continuing controversy in the United States over accepting Syrian refugees. My colleague Victor Beatty has been following this story and joins us again today. Victor.
Well, hello, Susan. President Obama on the sidelines of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum meeting in Manila Wednesday criticized Republicans in Congress for their efforts to suspend the entry of 10,000 Syrian refugees into the U.S. over the next year in the wake of Friday's Paris attacks.
We are not well served when, in response to a terrorist attack, we descend into fear and panic. We don't make good decisions if it's based on hysteria or an exaggeration of risks. And I think the refugee debate is an example of us not being well served by some of the commentary that's been taking place by officials back home and in the media.
Concerns were heightened following the discovery that one of the terrorists involved in the carnage in Paris had slipped into Europe with a wave of Syrian migrants. The Speaker of the House of Representatives, Paul Ryan, called Tuesday for a pause in the program until lawmakers can be persuaded the vetting process is safe.
Our nation has always been welcoming, but we cannot let terrorists take advantage of our compassion. This is a moment where it's better to be safe than to be sorry. So we think the prudent, the responsible things take a pause in this particular aspect of this refugee program in order to verify that terrorists are not trying to infiltrate the refugee population.
On Tuesday, White House officials spoke with 34 of 50 state governors via conference call to explain how refugees are screened for entry. More than 20 of those governors have said that refugees are not welcome in their states. But Rice University political scientist Paul Brace told me there is little governors can do to stop the process.
They could make it difficult for non-governmental organizations operating in their states if they brought people in, but states can't inhibit population migration within the United States. If they're saying they're refusing, they can't. If they're expressing reservations, they can express them, but they have no force of law. In terms of what's going on in Congress, the law we're operating under right now is an act on immigration passed in 1980, which supported the idea that the United States should aid people fleeing situations like those in Syria and put a lot of power in the hands of the president. It's got a provision about annual admission of refugees and admission of emergency situation refugees. Well, I think it'd be easy to declare this an emergency situation. I think what Ryan's trying to do is pass a quick pause, and then there's other Republican legislation that's calling for extremely rigorous vetting processes, almost impossible vetting processes, wherein the Homeland Security Department would have to guarantee to Congress that anyone they let in would not be a terrorist threat. But I'm a little unclear on what Congress can do unless they get both chambers to agree, and then they'd have to pass that legislation, and Obama would have to sign it. And I guess this would modify the 1980 Act.
Well, Paul, what about the state governors? Can they take this matter to court?
They'd have nothing to stand on. States cannot control immigration. That's what came up in U.S. versus Arizona when Arizona started trying to pass laws concerning immigrants and identification and things they were imposing on people they thought might be immigrants or look like immigrants. Supreme Court said they couldn't do that, that that's a federal power.
Federal officials say the U.S. refugee admissions process will take 18 to 24 months and include multi-agency screenings, background checks, and criminal records checks.
Thank you very much, Victor.
All right, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, declaring a cyber war on ISIS, and members of the entertainment community respond to the Paris attacks. Just days after the terror attacks in Paris, a loose-knit group of hackers and activists known as Anonymous announced it is declaring cyber war on the so-called Islamic State. Anonymous hackers say they are preparing to launch waves of cyber attacks to cripple ISIS oil production, communications, and extensive social media recruitment. International Edition's Doug Bernard tracks cyber issues for us, and he's in the studio here. Welcome, Doug.
Hi there.
Hi. What is Anonymous saying?
First, let's take a look at who or what Anonymous is. I very often liken it to fog. You know it's definitely there, but it's very hard to actually grab onto anything. So let's say that Anonymous is a shadowy group. There is no formal membership. Anybody could call themselves a member of Anonymous. There are, however, some individuals who are leaders, and they're basically see themselves as sort of Robin Hoods, cyber vigilantes. Kind of going out and striking for where justice needs to be done and hitting the powerful and helping the meek, that kind of thing. So Anonymous has come out, or let's say parts of Anonymous have come out, because there really is no formal structure, and said that they are now declaring war following the Paris attacks on ISIS. So the real question I think has to be answered is, what exactly is it that they mean by this term cyber war?
These are the folks that wear the mask or are identified with the mask.
Very often you'll see them with the Guy Fawkes mask. You'll see them in the videos. It's sort of shadowy. Their voices are distorted. Very, very few members of Anonymous are actually public members of Anonymous. They like to, as the word suggests, kind of keep their identities hidden.
So what can they do?
Well, what they can do is what they've done in the past. Anonymous really kind of got going maybe about 2007, 2008. And they went after the Church of Scientology for a variety of reasons that they felt they needed to be taken down. And what Anonymous did there and what they've done in any number of cases since then is there's two basic forms of attack. One is sort of the classic denial of service. So they'll unleash these waves of requests targeting servers. The servers can't handle the traffic. They break down. They'll shut down the website. That's really a nuisance for a while, but it can really be fixed fairly quickly. The second kind of attack that they've launched traditionally in the past is the data breach. So they'll break into somebody. They'll deface their website. They'll grab their personal identifying information or their passwords or things like that and publish them. It's all very embarrassing. But again, nobody's really getting hurt by that. So what I think we can expect Anonymous to do in this time is going after ISIS social media ventures, whether they live on Facebook or Twitter or all of these various accounts. That said, now they've already come out and said that they've shut down about 5,000 ISIS-related Twitter accounts. But that said, the way social media works is those accounts can just pop back up like gophers coming out of the ground almost instantaneously. So you really have to ask, is this really going to do anything meaningful?
But it has already stirred up a response from ISIS.
Well, it has stirred up a response from ISIS. They, in a statement to their own members, and then kind of, you know, they anticipated for public release, they called Anonymous idiots.
Uh-huh.
But they did also remind all of their members, ISIS members, who are, you know, for real, that they do need to be careful. They shouldn't, as we always say, you shouldn't click on links you didn't ask for. You shouldn't open email that looks suspicious or, you know, from somebody that you've never heard of before. You know, just kind of keep yourself safe and clean out there. So in a strange way, the ISIS leadership is kind of preaching the same sort of cyber message that a lot of us always are. Keep yourself clean and safe while you're online.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Doug.
You bet.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Loud snoring is not just a problem for those who hear it. Snoring can cause sleep apnea and serious health effects for the snorer. While simple lifestyle changes can help, a San Francisco company has a more high-tech solution for snorers called Smart Nora. It's a bedside monitor that senses when snoring begins and wirelessly activates a pump to inflate a mat beneath the snorer's pillow, altering his head position. Behrouz Hariri is co-founder of Smart Nora.
Nora is actually listening for volumes of snoring that are below the sensitivity of their partner. So just before snoring is getting loud enough to wake them up, Nora does the gentle push or the gentle movement.
The Mayo Clinic says about half of adults snore and suggests some simple snoring solutions such as losing weight, sleeping on your side, and avoiding alcohol before bedtime. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
The entertainment industry is reacting to the terrorist attacks in Paris. Several music and cultural events were canceled. Some of Hollywood stars are also commenting on the tragedy. International Edition's David Byrd has details.
Jane Fonda calls Paris her second home. The 77-year-old two-time Academy Award winner, who is generating more Oscar buzz for her role in the film Youth, says that she is concerned the attack will make life even more difficult for refugees seeking asylum in Europe.
I have family there, so the first thing I had to do was find out if everybody was okay. You know, my heart just breaks for refugees because it's going to be so much harder now. I mean, it's hard to imagine things could be harder for the refugees, but it's going to become more difficult.
Rachel Weisz, Fonda's co-star in Youth, says that the attacks are a terrible tragedy, something that the whole world feels.
Well, I mean, it's a very hard thing to talk about. Like, I guess all I can really say is it's just an absolutely incredibly terrible tragedy, and my heart goes out to the victims and their families, and just our, you know, I think everyone on planet Earth, our thoughts and our thoughts are with those people. It's a terrible tragedy.
Christian Bale stars in the new film The Big Short, about four outsiders in the world of high finance who predicted the credit and housing bubble of the mid-2000s and decide to take on the big banks for their greed. He says the Paris attacks call for wise leadership and compassion.
It's unbelievable. It's horrifying. And just a desire to somehow let people in Paris know that, you know, the world is standing with them and feels united with them in this unbearable grief. And, you know, man, do we ever need, you know, wise elders to kind of guide us through this and tell us how to respond.
Jeffrey Wright, who plays Papa in the new Disney Pixar animated film The Good Dinosaur, says that the attacks on Paris, because of its status as a world cultural center, are an attack on all of humanity.
I just just want to express a sense of solidarity with the people there, and also just express the need as well for real strength right now for all of us, and working together to try to bring this to an end.
Veteran actor William Shatner says he doesn't understand how Islamic extremists hope to further their cause by killing innocent people.
If you shoot someone, even if I don't even know them, because you're trying to convince me that what you think is right, I don't know how that works. The only thing it arouses in me is fear and resentment, suspicion and distrust, and ultimately hate.
Several films have also altered or canceled their release plans. The terrorism-themed movie Made in France was scheduled for release November 18th, but that has been postponed. Monday night, cast members of the final Hunger Games film wore Mockingjay pins adorned with ribbons in the colors of the French flag at a subdued premiere in Los Angeles. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering rewards for information leading to six key leaders of the Somalia-based terrorist organization Al-Shabaab. The U.S. Secretary of State has authorized rewards of up to $6 million for information on the whereabouts of Abu Obeida Diriye, up to $5 million each for information on Mahad Karate, Ma'alim Daoud, Hassan Afguye, and up to $3 million each for information on Malim Salman and Ahmad Iman Ali. Since 2006, Al-Shabaab has killed thousands of civilians, aid workers, and peacekeepers in Somalia, Uganda, and Kenya. Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for the July 11, 2010 suicide bombings in Kampala, Uganda, which killed more than 70 people, including one American citizen. Al-Shabaab also claimed responsibility for the September 21st through 24th, 2013 terrorist attack against the Westgate Shopping Mall in Nairobi, which left more than 60 people dead and nearly 200 wounded, and the April 2nd attack on Garissa University College in Kenya, which resulted in 150 deaths. The U.S. Secretary of State designated Al-Shabaab a foreign terrorist organization on March 18, 2008. In February 2012, Al-Shabaab and the Al-Qaeda terrorist network jointly announced they had formed an alliance. Abu Obeida, also known as Diriye, was named the leader of Al-Shabaab on September 6, 2014, after the death of former Al-Shabaab Emir Ahmed Abdi O'Mohammed, otherwise known as Godanye. Mahad Karate, also known as Abdirrahman Mohammed Warsameh, has played a key role in Al-Shabaab's assassination operations and the April 2nd attack on Garissa University College. Ma'alim Daoud is responsible for Al-Shabaab's planning, recruitment, training, and operations against the government of Somalia and Western targets. Hassan Afguye oversees Al-Shabaab's financial activities ranging from fake charities and fundraising to racketeering and kidnapping. Ma'alim Salman leads Al-Shabaab's African foreign terrorist fighters and has been involved in attacks against tourists, entertainment establishments, and churches in Africa. Ahmad Imam Ali has recruited Kenyan youth and raised funds for Al-Shabaab. Anyone with information on these terrorist leaders should contact the nearest U.S. embassy or the Rewards for Justice office via the website at www.rewardsforjustice.net or by email at info@rewardsforjustice.net. Individuals in North America can call this phone number, 1-800-877-3927.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.